Welcome to episode 24 of Near Death Dolls. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Paige.
And we're your hosties with the mosties.
While talking about ghosties.
And other dickish shit.
Oh, dickish, you say. Okay.
Yeah, like a dick.
Oh, like a dick. Dick-like.
Dick-like, yes.
Well, thank you for joining us today, all you lovelies out there. Lisa will be covering the unsolved murder of Ken Rex McElroy.
Mm-hmm. But before we get started, you know what we want to ask of you badass listeners. Will you please take a quick second to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? Even if it's just, I want to marry this podcast, because who wouldn't want to marry us, right? And leave us a couple stars. 5 is what we usually aim for, but that's up to you. And we definitely want to continue to grow. And by adding that review, you're making that happen, Captain.
That's right, Captain.
Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch, hell yeah.
Oh, give me some crunch berries.
Oh, God, that sounds good. Yeah. Anyway, thanks. Thanks for your support, guys. We really appreciate it. Now, Lisa, what's your nightcap this evening?
Let me tell you, Paige.
I'm fucking ready.
This probably shouldn't be a nightcap because I'm drinking an espresso martini.
Oh, you're going to be up all night.
It's going to be a party, girl. Party. So let me tell you what's in it. I didn't make it myself. My husband made it. As you know, he likes to play bartender.
He's the bartender of the house.
He really is. So what's in this espresso martini is I think it's supposed to be 2 shots of espresso. I think he only did one this time, but I think it's supposed to be 2 shots of espresso. Mr. Black cold brew coffee liqueur.
Ooh, yummy.
Amazing. It almost has a chocolatey taste to it, but there's no chocolate in it. It just has that really rich coffee flavor. Like you can get that from the beans naturally. There's also vodka, simple syrup, and it's all shaken with a cracked ice cube. And it's like one of those massive ice cubes, and the guy in the video like takes a spoon and like smacks it and breaks it into like large chunks.
Did your husband do that?
Oh, you know he did. He's gonna mess up our spoons, damn it. But that's okay, he's having fun. And then you put it in the shaker and you shake it and then you pour it and it makes the most beautiful foam. Like this is totally vegan, everything, there's no animal products, but the foam that comes off of this is beautiful, thick, creamy, amazing. And you garnish it with 3 coffee beans and a twist of lemon.
Lemon, really? Lemon plus mm-hmm. coffee. I would have never done that.
You just garnish the edge of the glass, and there's a whole science to mixology about what you're tasting, and as you're tasting, what you're smelling, and certain things complement it. So when you take a sip of this, you're not tasting lemon, but you're smelling it, and it brings out flavors in your mouth. It's amazing, like how that things go together like that.
I was going to say, that sounds like witchcraft, and so we're going to have to go ahead and burn you and your husband. I love you. I love you. Don't burn. Never.
If I was a witch, I wouldn't burn, so I'm not too worried.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
This is not witchcraft. I was not the one to invent this. This has been on for quite a while. So, Paige, what are you having as your nightcap this evening?
My nightcap is a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon, or Cab Sav. For those of us who don't feel like saying the whole word.
Nope. What kind of Cab Sav you got?
The brand is Ravenswood. It's got a cool ass label. That's why I picked it out. But I also picked it out because it was on sale for $4 at the grocery store. So I was like, hell yeah, can't go wrong with $4.
No. I have seen this one. It's like 3 ravens kind of in a circle.
Yep. They're doing a Rat King thing, but with ravens.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You guys, if you want to hear a whole story about what a Rat King is, you need to be on our Patreon and listen to our Dolls After Dark episode. Good God.
Oh my God. If you guys, we talk all about Rat Kings and it's disgusting. And that's what this logo looks like a little bit. It's all these ravens tied up together. And But, I mean, it looks cooler than it tastes, is what I'm going to say.
Well, for $4, you get what you pay for.
Exactly. I knew. You know what? It's not bad, though. It really is not bad. I've had some red wines that are, like, you know, at least a little bit more expensive than this, like, you know, up into the $20, $30 range that I couldn't stand because it was just too dry or whatever. This one's not bad. I can drink it. I'm happy. That's all I need for $4 and a cool label.
Well, there you go.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So that's my nightcap of the evening.
Very nice. Very nice. But hey, how about I tell you our story tonight?
I would love to hear this. I want to know about Ken Rex McElroy.
Oh, if you haven't heard this one, it's a doozy. It's if murder can be fun, this is the story of it.
I like fun things. I don't know anything about this case, by the way.
Awesome. So, hey, I first heard of this case, I want to say it was BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Nice, nice.
Years ago. And it was very interesting. And when I say fun, like, I don't condone murder, usually.
Right, right.
but we're going to get into that. So, I'm going to pull a Charles Dickens line for my very first sentence here.
You know, I love Charles Dickens.
I didn't know that, but here we go. Ken Rex McElroy was a dick to begin with.
Perfect. Nice throwback to Christmas Story.
Yes.
Or Christmas Carol, Jesus Christ.
He was the town bully of Skidmore, Missouri, and he wasn't just a dick. He was a truly deplorable human. And before we get into his murder, let's learn about what led up to it.
Let's do that. Is this going to explain why he's a dick?
Oh, yes.
Fucking dick. Okay, let's do it.
So, Kenneth Rex McElroy was born June 1st, 1934, and he was the 15th of 16 children born to Tony and Mabel McElroy, who were migrant tenant farmers who settled outside of Skidmore, Missouri.
Oh my God, that poor woman.
By the end, they were just walking out.
I bet it was like, I think I'm pregnant. Here's a baby. Okay, I was pregnant.
Pretty much. So he was born at the end of the Great Depression in America that spanned from 1929 to 1933. But that doesn't necessarily mean just because the Great Depression ended that everything was hunky-dory for the McElroy family.
What? Come on. It's got to be hunky-dory.
No, ma'am. Around the age of 15, Ken dropped out of school and worked with his family farming land. But that really wasn't Ken's jam.
What was his jam? Did he want to be a DJ?
Yes. Oh, goodness. Okay. Having grown up poor, he knew he didn't want to be just a farmer working for someone else. He wanted to prosper by any means necessary, and unfortunately, his endeavors weren't exactly on the up and up.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he wants to be a criminal, part of the other culture.
Yes. He started with petty crimes, small theft, and getting into fights. But over time, Ken started cattle rustling, which is essentially stealing livestock and then selling them at auction.
Oh my God. Okay, I didn't know what a rustler was for a very long time. I'd only heard the phrase. Mm-hmm. And in one of my college essays, I called some, I don't even remember who it was, but I titled them a cattle rustler, like the whole fucking essay. And my teacher gave me an F because he was like, that means they steal cows, Paige. And I was like, oh. Sorry, go ahead. I just had to insert that.
So he would get other people to sell what he stole, technically. So even though the farmers actually found out it was him stealing, they couldn't do much about it because the livestock wasn't branded.
Well, that's their fault, I guess.
It is. It is.
Okay. Okay.
And with other people selling the animals, they had no actual proof he was behind it, but they knew. They knew.
Okay. Okay. They couldn't prove it, but they knew and they wanted him out of their territory.
Well, they pretty much just wanted him to stop being a jerk and stealing.
Yeah, jerk McElroy.
So he would also steal grain, antiques, gasoline, anything he could steal and resell.
Damn, gasoline. Okay. He's just stealing everything now.
Pretty much. And as sad as it is to say, he was pretty good at his career as a criminal and it paid well.
Not all of us find what we're good at. Good for him.
No, no. So sadly, his crimes weren't all on the petty side. While Ken was a dick, he was also known to be something of a charmer.
Oh, really? Was he handsome?
It depends on what century you're living in.
Maybe during the Depression he was a looker.
I could see maybe when he was younger, like seeing pictures of him, he might have been a good looking guy at the time when he was, like I said, younger, but he was known for having these like piercing blue eyes.
Oh, I see. Some girls, that's all they need.
So he was known for wooing girls, and I don't mean women, I mean underage girls.
Ooh, God, come on, dude.
Oh, just hold on to your pants, girl. Hold on. Oh,
okay. All right.
So he married his first wife, Sharon, when she was 15 years old, and he was in his early 20s.
Ah, damn. But that's kind of a time thing, huh? Like, at that time, that's not as bad.
I think this is in the 70s, so it's still kind of bad.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm still thinking Depression era. 70s, never mind.
Or maybe, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it's in the 60s, 50s. I couldn't get a date. It was sometime between the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Yeah. It's not okay. Yeah.
No, it's not okay. So she was 15. He's in his early 20s. He beat her quite often, and somehow they managed to make two children in between the beatings.
Oh, my God.
But around the time the second child was born, he had acquired, I'm going to say, a girlfriend named Sally, with whom he had two children, and she was underage as well. And then he had another two children with his wife, Sharon, and they all lived together with Ken.
Wait, they all lived together, even his girlfriend that he, quote unquote, acquired?
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, quote unquote, acquired, do you mean kidnap or coerced in any way?
Not kidnapped, but
okay.
Wooed and basically took her away from her family. So, I mean, I guess it could technically, I don't know if it's technically kidnapping or not, but she's underage. That's statutory.
That is statutory. That is right. He's like, you know, my wife's old now. She's at least 20. I need a younger girl.
Yeah, pretty much. So he has a wife and a girlfriend, a couple kids. I think he's like six kids deep already.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, so like I said, six kids and two, I hate to say lovers or women because neither of them are correct, but two baby mamas. But that was not enough for Ken.
He wanted more than two? And they're both living together and know about each other?
Yes, ma'am. He then brought in Alice Wood, another underage girl, into his house.
Three now. Okay, so if this were modern times, he'd have his own reality show called Sister Wives.
No shit. So Alice had a son by Ken and was, like all the other females, abused by Ken.
Okay, so she at least isn't being neglected. I'm just kidding. That's awful.
That's awful, Paige.
I know.
But Alice decided enough was enough, and she left Ken and moved back in with her parents.
Oh, okay. Good for her.
This did not sit well with Ken. And instead of changing his ways, he did what he did best, be a bully.
Did he go after her after she left?
He started calling Alice's parents and threatening them, saying he was going to come over and just take Alice and his son, essentially by force. And Alice's dad, who, God bless him, was a brave man, told Ken to shove it up his tailpipe.
That's a very nice way of saying that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's exactly the phrasing used, but that's what was said. Now, wouldn't it be great if that's where the bullying ended?
Yes.
Yeah, no. Ken came over to their house, shot Alice's dad in the leg.
What? Just for saying, shove it up your tailpipe.
Yeah. So Ken did get arrested on assault charges, but through intimidation and threatening, Alice's dad dropped the charges, and sadly, Alice and her son went back to live with Ken and the rest of the girls and babies.
Holy fuck. Oh my God. What? I thought she was free and clear. Oh my God.
After Alice's return, surprise, surprise, Ken got another underage girl into the situation.
Oh, okay. Now he's up to four. Soon he'll have a baker's dozen, I'm sure.
No kidding. Her name is Trina McLeod. Trina was 12 years old.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's not like 15, 16, 17 years old. 12, my dear.
12 years old. That poor little girl. Jesus, that's awful.
So all these girls have been underage, but I believe Trina was the youngest, and Ken was about 35 years old.
Oh, God. He shouldn't even be looking at those girls that young.
No. Like I said, he is a truly deplorable person. So Trina had her first child at 14 with Ken, and she was no exception to his abuse.
God, wait. Okay, do they live in a place where there's enough rooms for everybody, or is it like a two-bedroom apartment?
I think it's a farmhouse.
Oh, okay. So maybe a little bit more space.
Maybe, but still, like, I think we're like 7 kids deep at this point, say it maybe 8, and 4 women, like, all living together.
Oh my God, can you imagine that? What if your boyfriend or husband was like, I'm gonna bring in a 12-year-old girl, okay? No.
Absolutely not. No. But after a while, Trina had it with Ken, and she and Alice decided to escape to Trina's parents.
I hope it works this time. Jesus, last time it did not work so well.
But like before, it didn't take long for Ken to locate them. He beat both the girls badly and then burned down Trina's parents' house.
What the hell? Oh my God, who is watching this man? Nobody? They're just like, okay, sure.
We're going to get into all that. Do not worry. We're going to get into all of it.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he's just a dick. Let's just say that.
Yes. So Trina, who I believe is around 15-ish, had to go to the hospital because he beat her so badly. And the doctor was able, after some trying, to get the information out of Trina as to what happened. And the doctor called CPS.
Oh, good. Okay.
Trina was put into foster care as she was still underage.
Oh, God. 15 years old, you said, right?
Has a baby. 15 years old.
Mm. Has a baby. Yeah. With this guy who has babies with 3 other girls who were underage at the time, if they're not now.
So Ken was charged with rape, assault, and brandishing a deadly weapon. He was let out on bond and proceeded to threaten and stalk the family that Trina was staying with.
Who let him out?
He was let out on bond.
Yeah.
So here's what he would do. He would sit outside their home in his truck and even call and make threats over the phone. One time, he even called the foster parents saying he would trade them, quote, girl for girl, meaning he was threatening to take the foster parents' biological daughter, stating that he knew where she went to school and her bus stop. What a fucking sicko.
Yeah, what a sicko, dude.
Very disgusting. After some time, reasons unknown, I think there were multiple factors, Trina decided to leave foster care and return to Ken's home.
What?
So it's very confusing. I don't know if she did it because she was tired of them, like him threatening the family, because I think she was she was pretty close to the family from what I've heard, but then also some people said she just got bored, you know, because she's basically been, I don't want to say like on her own, but she's not someone's child anymore. She's kind of someone's kind of girlfriend, baby
like
mom
an adult
thing.
Yeah, she's been having kids and stuff, so she's probably used to making her own decisions. You're right, she might just be like, oh, I'm in a situation where I don't own this place, I don't have any decisions to make. But then I don't know if Ken will let his ladies make a lot of decisions unless it comes to child care. That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that no one really knows why she did it. But so Ken decides to divorce his first wife Sharon, who I feel like somehow she escaped, but she kind of falls off the report. She kind of just disappears from all mention.
Yeah, hopefully she disappears in a good way, like she got away.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty, it's not like he killed her. She got away somehow. But anyways, he divorces her. Then he marries Trina, not because he loves her, but because the case against him was still open. And with Trina as his wife, she could not be compelled to testify against him. And with that, the charges against him were all dropped.
Damn it, Ken. What an asshole. Okay, I'm going to take a drink because I'm angry.
Take a sip, what the shit.
Sip, what the shit. Here we go.
Same. Okay. So on July 27th, 1976... Farmer Romaine Henry heard from his son that someone was shooting off a gun down the road on their property. So Romaine hops in his truck and heads down the road to check it out. And let me just pause here and say I'm tickled that his name is Romaine, like the lettuce, and he's a farmer. I think it was meant to be.
I think that's adorable. I would love to meet someone named Romaine.
I think it's really cute, Romaine. So anyways, all right, back to it. Romaine gets further down the road and sees none other than Ken Rex standing in the middle of the road with a shotgun.
What is this asshole doing now?
Oh, yeah. As Romaine got out of his truck, Ken begins walking towards him with the gun pointed at Romaine. He asks Ken what he's doing on his property firing a shotgun. Ken calls Romaine a dirty son of a bitch and accuses him of being at his house.
No, come on.
Romaine says he hadn't been at Ken's house, but Ken insists he saw Romaine's white Pontiac. But there's a little problem. Romaine doesn't have a white Pontiac car and tells this to Ken, saying, I don't have this. But Ken don't give a flying fart and proceeds to shoot Romaine in the gut.
No. Did he live? Is he okay?
Hold on, Paige. You like to jump ahead, girlfriend.
I'm jumping ahead. I'm scared for this romaine kid.
Romaine's an older guy at this point. He's married. Oh, okay. Has his own kids. So Romaine's just got shot in the gut at close range. Ken pumps the shotgun and puts the barrel under Romaine's chin and fires, but luckily Romaine moves his head in time not to be shot. Instead, it grazed the outside of his cheek.
Wow.
So Romaine hurries back to his truck, blood just a-pouring from him. Apparently his intestines have come out a little bit, but he somehow manages to drive himself back home where his wife takes him to the hospital.
Ah, okay, good. Good, but also not good.
No. But by some miracle, he survived.
Oh, good. Okay. Romaine's alive, at least at this point.
Yes.
I'm happy.
Yes. Ken was charged with, quote, felonious assault with intent to kill or do great bodily harm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that that's what he was doing. Yes.
Yeah. Then Ken goes to jail and everyone lives happily ever after, right?
Yes.
Wrong.
Damn it.
So Ken's defense is that he just didn't do it. He was out hunting that day. He even had some of his hunting buddies as witnesses as an alibi. And there were several neighbors of Romaine's that saw Ken heading towards Henry's farm. But they didn't want to testify against Ken for fear of getting on his bad side, as if there were a good side.
You either get shot in the gut or you get married to him. That's not
pretty much
a good side going on.
So even the judge in this trial recused himself because he was afraid of Ken, as Ken had threatened to burn down his barn. And not long after, the judge's barn did indeed burn down.
Oh my God, this guy, nobody can stand up to him.
No, the judge was like, you know what? I'm not doing this.
Right. I want my barn intact. And guess what? It's not anyway. You might as well have accused him.
Really? Yeah. So after Romaine was out of the hospital, he noticed Ken, who was out on bond, would essentially stalk and harass his entire family. Ken would sit outside their house, according to Romaine, on at least 100 different occasions.
Oh my God. It's if he doesn't have enough going on at home to keep him entertained. He's got a bunch of kids, girlfriends/wives.
Freaking harem.
A harem, yes.
So finally, when it came time for the trial, Ken was found not guilty due to lack of evidence, since there were only testimonies that couldn't be backed up. And ultimately, while the jury was sure Ken was guilty, they knew there just wasn't enough concrete evidence. And poor Romaine, feeling defeated, he felt like he did all he could do and it was done. But no! Freaking Ken Rex decided one day to follow poor old Romaine in his truck. And as Romaine got out of his truck to open a gate, Ken shot a rifle at Romaine's head, but luckily missed.
Good. Jesus fucking Christ. Good, I guess. Holy shit, this guy.
Yeah, I don't know if it was on purpose that he missed or if Ken's shot was just a little off, but Romaine lucked out again.
It's time to move, I think, to get away from this asshole.
No shit. But it's hard when, like, if you're a farmer and you're, like, generations of farmers and you have land that's been in your family forever, you know, it's really hard to mentally pick up and leave, you know, just at a drop of a hat, you know.
What else are you supposed to do? Like, get a job as an accountant at that point? You've been a farmer your whole life. You're right.
That exactly.
Not easy to do.
So it's important to know that Ken's wife, Trina, poor little Trina who tried to get away but was dragged back, she didn't stay sweet and innocent, sadly.
Of course. Oh my God. I bet from the beginning she did not stay sweet and innocent.
Well, I'm like, how can you when you're tied to a shitbag like Ken, you know?
Right. Yeah. Every day, all day. Hell no.
So, and I feel like it was a survival tactic almost for her to toughen up. You know what I mean?
To become a little bit more like Ken McElroy.
People did say she became like a female Ken McElroy, which is a scary thought.
No, girl, no.
I know. The one that tried to get away and just couldn't. And
couldn't.
No. So keep this in mind as I move forward, okay? So Ernest Bowenkamp, he goes by Bo, he was an owner of a grocery store called the B&B Grocery. He was a 6'5" farmer type, 220 pounds, and a pretty quiet guy, didn't talk so much.
Okay, okay.
His wife, Lois, was the opposite. She was short and no-nonsense, the opposite of her husband, and she worked at the grocery store with her husband and their friend slash employee, Evelyn. So on April 25th, 1980, so that's where we're in the 80s now, two girls walk into the B&B grocery while Beau is at the meat counter and Evelyn was working at the register. One girl was a teenager, the other one was about 5 years old. They wander around getting snacks and then they go up to the register to check out. The teenage girl puts the bag of cookies on the counter and asks for a pack of cigarettes. Evelyn sees the little girl, the little five-year-old, has some candy in her hand, some like little, I guess they used to call it penny candy, like single pieces of candy. So Evelyn sees that and asks if they want to buy that too. The teenager says, oh, she has her own money. So I'm guessing the little girl might have some quarters in her pocket to pay for the candy. I don't know.
Yeah, some kind of like allowance of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the little girl doesn't come forward to pay. She just kind of stands there. So Evelyn asks the teen if she's going to pay, like, or what, you know?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, the teenager gets pissed, takes the candy out of the little girl's hand and puts it on a shelf and they start to walk out. Well, the little girl wasn't having that. She grabbed the candy again and starts following the teenager out the door. But Evelyn yells after them saying, hey, like, she still has the candy. So the teenager is pissed, grabs the candy out of the little girl's hand, throws it back on the counter, and they start to leave again. But the little girl's, like, crying her head off, having a tantrum as little kids do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you take things away from them, they cry.
Don't take my candy.
But Evelyn had angered the wrong kiddos because those kids belonged to none other than Ken Rex McElroy.
Fuck. Jesus Christ. So both of them, the teenager and the little girl?
Yes, they belong to Ken. So about 30 minutes later, Big Bad Ken comes into the store holding his pocket knife in his hand, blade out.
Why? Because his little girl wanted some penny candy? He needs to calm down.
So Bo sees this and tells him there's no need to have the knife, and Ken replies, no one tells me what to do. I have every right to stand here cleaning my fingernails, don't I?
Oh my God, so he's sitting there like a fucking guy in a TV show, like just cleaning his nails with a fucking knife. Oh, stupid.
It makes me cringe to think of putting like a blade under my nails. Like, I have a thing about nails and teeth, and if either of them break, it freaks me out.
Yeah, I don't need that. I've seen The Ring. I remember what happens in the video. I don't need to see it.
So Ken's in there. Then Trina comes in behind him and starts cussing up a storm, yelling. And I'm going to quote what she says, okay?
Yes,
so
please.
No, this isn't me writing this. Let me. She says, quote, I want to know which of you fucking bitches accused my fucking kid of coming in this fucking storm raiding it. Trina's ready to fight. She is ready to fight. She says, quote, I'm gonna take one or both of you fucking bitches out here in the fucking street and whip your fucking asses off. And at this point, the F-bombs are just a little redundant here, Trina.
Right, you only need to say it once and they get the point.
Like, how many of these do you have to drop, lady?
Every other word, apparently, but I guess she's been learning from Ken.
I would think so, yeah. So, Lois, Beau's wife, tells Trina, just give her a chance to explain. And after Lois and Evelyn tell Ken and Trina what happened, like, you know, like, chill, cool people, Trina says, why would my daughter lie to me? And the ladies have no answer to that. Like, Ken and Trina basically say that they're never going to shop at that store again, and that really should have been the end of it. But we know Ken. He doesn't let things go.
He does not, for sure. He shot someone in the gut and still felt like he had to go after that person, as if he hadn't caused that person enough problems.
No shit. So that very evening, while Beau and Lois were having dinner at home, they could see out their window three trucks slowly passing by, each with guns pointed out the truck windows. They were being driven by Ken, Trina, and one of the older daughters, Tammy.
Oh my God. So not only does he have his little army of child brides who are a little bit older now, he also has his army of children of child brides. It's like he created his own compound.
No kidding. He could almost be a cult at this point. Like, yes. Shit.
Yeah, and they are down, I guess, or at least Trina is.
Yeah, yeah. So literally, they circled the block several times just to intimidate the Bowen camps.
The poor grocery store is like, we just literally wanted a penny for that candy.
Yeah. So Lois calls the sheriff and told him what was going on, to which he replied, Now, don't worry about it. He won't do anything. He may harass you a bit, but he won't do anything serious. I'm like, the fuck what? Kind of answer is that from law enforcement?
Oh, my God. They're like, we don't want to go out there, tell her whatever you have to shut her up.
Yeah. He won't do anything. And everyone knows he shot freaking Romaine Henry in the gut.
Exactly. And he tried to shoot him in the fucking head.
Twice.
Yeah.
So, sure enough, Ken harassed them for months. He'd parked his truck outside their house all hours of the day and night. He would fire his gun into the air to scare them. He even told Lois one time he would give her a $100 bill to fight Trina in the street.
Ha! I would take that.
Like, what?
Can I bring a knife?
So, on July 8th, 1980, Beau is at a store. He's out back on the loading dock, breaking down boxes. I don't know if you've ever had to do that. I have.
Oh my God, yes.
So Ken rolls up and confronts Beau. He gets out of his truck and confronts Beau. They have some words and Ken gets back in his truck. So Beau turns around thinking that he's leaving, but nope. Ken points a shotgun at Beau and shoots him at close range in the neck.
Oh, in the neck? Come on.
The neck. Ken takes off in his truck and Beau is laying half in, half out of the back door of his grocery store. And across the street, there's a bar called the D&G Tavern. Some people that were leaving saw Beau laying there and ran to help him.
Good.
So Beau is still coherent and just barely as his neck is like gushing blood, but he can say McElroy did it.
This does not bode well. Does that mean he does not survive?
Beau is rushed to the ER where the staff treats his injuries and by some sweet ass miracle, he survives.
Oh, thank God, Beau.
Beau survives.
I wonder too, though, because didn't you say, okay, the grocery store is called B&B. I've been sitting here like, bread and breakfast? I don't know, bed and breakfast?
I'm pretty sure at least one of the B is for Beau and Camp, but Beau is his nickname for Beau and Beau. Camp. His real name's Ernest. I don't know where the other B comes from, but this is the B&B grocery.
I like the name. I was like, B&B. And then you said the bar is also a set of initials. What is it?
It's D&G.
D&G? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's the initials of the owner. I can't be 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure.
You're probably right.
So, Ken takes off in his truck, but is apprehended by State Highway Patrol Trooper Richard Stratton. And apparently Stratton was one of the only people who had the cojones to go after Ken.
Thank God somebody does. Jesus.
So, Ken is charged with attempted murder, but post bail, and I'm not sure how that happens, the very next day.
Yeah, how did he get that money? Come on.
I don't know. So, the next day, he goes into the D&G Tavern that's located across from Bobo and Camp's store, and he just has a drink. And I'm like, dude, you got some nerve.
He does have some nerves. I'm sure that's exactly why he went in there. He's such a contrarian. He's like, I have to go after the people who don't like me.
So this jerkwad continued to harass the Bowen camps and their employee, Evelyn. One night, Ken is outside Evelyn's house and fires a gun. So she calls the town marshal. The town marshal talks to Ken. Ken pulls a gun on the marshal, and the next day, the marshal friggin' quits his job.
Oh my God! He can't even do anything about it. He's just like, nope, I'm out. I'm gonna retire. I'm only 32, but I'm gonna retire.
Yeah. The marshal's like, oh, no. So, Ken's charge of attempted murder gets changed to second-degree assault because he claimed it was for self-defense.
Self-defense, my fucking ass. Everybody's afraid of this guy. He must have some real crazy eyes. Like, as soon as he looks at you, you must be like, I never want to talk to this man ever again.
He's such a bully. He's burned down a judge's barn. He's pulled a gun on a marshal. Like, he has no, he gives no shits.
It's true. And you would hope that someone could stand up to him, but so far, no. Mm-mm.
So, yeah, it got dropped down to secondary assault because of self-defense, because he says that he felt he was being threatened by Beau because Beau was holding like a knife cutting the boxes, and he said because he was holding a knife he felt threatened.
I guess. I mean, no. Yeah. Probably not.
So he was found guilty and sentenced to 2 years in prison, but because of Missouri law, I don't know if it's still this way, but because of the law, even a criminal found guilty is allowed to stay out on bond during the appeals process. So Ken was free to continue to terrorize anyone he wanted.
Oh my God. Does that mean he goes back after the family of the grocery store?
So.
Uh-oh. Okay. Okay.
So one day, Ken and Trina go to the D&G Tavern, and Trina is carrying a rifle with a bayonet since Ken was not allowed to be out in public with a firearm as part of his bond.
Makes sense. They should say that for life. Like, yeah. The rest of your life, Ken, you don't need that gun.
No. So he's having his wife carry it.
Oh, Trina. Okay. Yeah, sure. She's probably much better not.
No. So customers in the tavern say they saw Ken take possession of the rifle and start talking about how he wanted to finish what he had started with Bo Bowenkamp. So he's making threats.
Oh my God. And so him and Trina are just sitting there having a couple drinks and they have a gun right there in the bar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So someone reported to the county prosecutor that Ken was in possession of a rifle and the prosecutor filed to have his bond revoked. But Ken's lawyer, whose name is McFadden, I forgot his first name, he gets the hearing to revoke the bond postponed. And apparently that's this lawyer's tactic, is postponement.
And apparently it works. That's the sucky part. Wait, I ever get in trouble, I want McFadden. I don't care if he's gone.
We'll get the corpse. We'll bring back Zombie McFadden for your lawyer. I feel like this could be a really cool sitcom. Zombie McFadden, attorney at law.
Attorney at law. Yeah, exactly. He can get anybody off.
Pretty much. Now, the townspeople of Skidmore are done. D-O-N-E fucking over it.
Yeah, they're like, get this McElroy off the fucking streets, please.
Right. So on the morning of July 10th, 1981, the whole town gathered at their local American Legion Hall to discuss what legally could be done about Ken Rex Douchecockerson McElroy.
That should be his name on his birth certificate, okay?
Yeah. So during their meeting, it seemed like there wasn't much that could be done. They were trying to figure out how to protect themselves while he was out on his bail bond or whatever, until the next time they actually could get him in court. So, and they're thinking, strength in numbers. So some people suggested deputizing a posse, if you will, and have them keep an eye on Ken until his bond revoking. And the sheriff of the town said he would look into it when he got back to his office. So the sheriff is like, okay, let me see what we can do.
Hopefully something.
The sheriff leaves the Legion Hall, and shortly after that, a citizen comes in and tells everyone that Ken and Trina had just pulled up to the D&G Tavern that's located across the road, but to the side. So on the same side of the road, but there's a road in between the tavern and the Legion Hall. So it's right next door.
Small town.
Okay. Very small town. Okay. So about 60 or so men walk out of the Legion Hall as Trina and Ken are coming out of the tavern and getting into their truck. Trina notices all these people coming out, it's right across the road, so everyone's kind of out in the road. She notices them coming closer and closer to them, sort of surrounding the truck, if you will.
Interesting. I wonder if they think y'all are dicks.
So Ken goes to light a cigarette, and then boom, shots are fired at the truck. A few men grab Trina from the passenger side and get her away, kind of down the street to safety, but no one was helping Ken.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
So Ken had been shot in the back of the head, his body slumped back, his foot on the gas in park, until the engine died. Let me tell you, Paige, no one called the authorities, no one called an ambulance. It was nearly an hour before someone notified police to tell them what happened.
An hour? Wasn't Trina safe and, like, away? So she was like, oh, maybe my fucking husband Ken is dying now, thank God.
So I think some people were kind of keeping her off to the side, but I want to say how the police were notified was Trina called her lawyer, or their lawyer. The lawyer called the police, and that's how the police found out, through Trina, through the lawyer, through to the police. So it was nobody in town or no one around that called. It was Trina, probably, I think, that called. So
yeah, and just her lawyer. She didn't call the police.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of a shady area. So Skidmore police turned the investigation of the murder of Ken McElroy over to another unit, as the sheriff and the prosecutor felt that they were too close to the situation not to have it be a conflict of interest, which, fuck, good for them, because I'd be like, he tripped on his gun. Case closed. Let's party.
I would too. This is why we're not in law enforcement, Lisa.
Well, I mean, there's other reasons, but yes, that too.
That's true.
And long story short, there was an investigation, but no one was saying who shot Ken. Pretty much everyone said they didn't see the shooter because once they heard the shots, they said they hit the ground. And this was investigated by the FBI, and ultimately they couldn't find anyone to pinpoint the responsible party.
Hold on. Why did the FBI get involved?
I don't know the exact reason, but I think, but the FBI did come in to investigate. And they interviewed like 100-something people, and everyone says, I don't know who shot him. Everyone was saying they didn't know who shot him, and they could not figure it out. And that's the story of how the town of Skidmore got away with murder because no one said a thing.
I love it so much. The whole town came together to create like a bubble of safety of like, we hate this man. Let's get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And nobody has to get in trouble because we're all culpable. Yay!
Yes. And there's a documentary. I think it was on the Sundance Channel. It was called, No One Saw a Thing. And then there was a book too. I'm trying to remember all the names of everything. Oh, the book was called In Broad Daylight, I think.
That's so funny that they're making it like nobody saw. You know somebody saw it and somebody knows what happened. But they're like, you know what's more important? Ken being gone.
they solved a problem a very vigilante way. But like, I mean, murder's wrong. Yes. But let me tell you, this guy had it coming.
He was gonna, I mean, you know, he was acting threateningly towards the guy who owned the grocery store. That's not nice. And he'd done a lot of shit before that. So I don't miss him.
I don't think anyone misses him.
Nobody misses Ken Rex Dickelroy.
Yeah, someone should go change his tombstone. But, but yeah, that's a story of Ken Rex being taken care of, taken out. You know what I mean?
Taken out like the trash.
Like the stinky ass trash he was. All right, guys, that was our episode. We love you for listening. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at Near Death Dolls Podcast. You can tweet us on the Twitter at Near Death Dolls and send us an email at neardeathdolls@gmail.com with your spooky, creepy, personal, weird story that you want to share with us for our Dear Dollies episode, which we hope to have another one coming out soon. And, oh, let us know if we can use your name or not, and if you have a social media you want us to shout out, because we will.
That's right, we will. Ah, yes. So anyway, thanks for listening, guys. If you like what you heard, let us know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also help us by taking a screenshot while you're listening to our episode. Share it on Instagram, on Twitter, tag at Near Death Dolls. And it's a sample fast free way to support us. I meant to say
you sample. Heard that?
Sample. I tried so hard too. I was like, damn it, that said sample.
It's okay. It's because you tried so hard. That's why.
That's right. Don't try too hard. That's the lesson here.
That is the lesson. Learned.
I will never try again.
Okay, robot page.
Oh, dearest doll faces. I really appreciate you guys. So does Lisa. Continue to listen. Hopefully you like what you hear. And until next time, bye-bye.
Bye, dolls. Mwah. Don't be a pedophile creep asshole who shoots people in the gut and burns down their barns, because that's not good juju.
I feel like that's a good lesson to live by for anybody.
Anybody. Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
A special thanks to Sam Hears for our art and music.
If you'd like to see more from him, check out the links in our show notes.